and trying to knock it out, you know what I mean? So get it. Like, for instance, you look at Hopin as an example. I mean, they've just gone from zero to a billion market cap for literally no more than Crowdcast, really, to begin with. It's no different, really. But then they've bought StreamYard. They're just spending that investment money. They're going to be a massive player. Yeah. But they've just caught the right moment and have just fired on forward. So congrats to them. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about that in a bit because we're live, everybody. We are live with Brain Food Live on air, bringing it to you every Friday, which is a lie because we're not on next Friday because it's Good Friday. It's Easter and we're taking a kind of a break for next week. So this is going to be the last Brain Food Live for 2 weeks, but we've got an amazing show for you today. As ever, we do a quick sound check before we start. So everybody, if you can hear me on Crowdcast, please say hello. Give me a comment down there to say, Hung, I can hear you okay. And by the way, I keep screwing up because I haven't gone multicast properly for, I would say, consistently several weeks. So I'm like, my confidence is shot, man. So if you can hear me on LinkedIn, if I'm on there, can you like indicate that you can? Just give me one of those weird emoticons. Let me know you can hear me okay. And Facebook, if you're in the group and you can and you're watching this now, can you just say something, please? I'm kind of feeling like one of those plaintive, you know, soft lads that say, "Yeah, can you help me, please?" But I really need to know because the last three times I've done it, I've literally screwed it up to the point where things haven't gone out when they should have done. It's cost me money, actually, because I'm one of these to say, look, I'm going to do this, and, you know, if I don't do it, then I'll pay you back. So, yeah, don't cost me money. Give me thumbs up. Anyway, we seem to be okay in these various spaces, which is fine. I think even LinkedIn is okay. So thank you very much, everyone, Stuart in particular. A quick one for our sponsors. We are sponsored this week by Kelly Services. They are one of the biggest and best recruitment services businesses on the planet. You're looking at RPO, you're looking at agency, you're looking at advice, you're looking at technology implementation, workforce planning, workforce management, an entire suite of recruiting and workforce services. They are one of the few enterprise size partners, I think, that can take on the entire suite of it. So if you're operating at that kind of global level, this is the sort of business that you need to be aware of. They are, let me just share a link with them here. I think we're going to get Kelly's on at some point, whether on one of the shows that they sponsored or not, because I'm interested at enterprise. I know nothing about it. So it'd be quite cool to have some visibility of what that world looks like. Generally, tech startup is my core. So I need to diversify away from that. Anyway, we're always with Adam Gordon, I'm pleased to say, back in the hot seat. So Adam, how are you doing? Have you had a good week?
Yeah, I've had a good week. But I've got to be honest, I'm quite pleased it's Friday.
Okay.
I've got a lot of things to do to finish off before the end of Friday, but I am looking forward to doing absolutely, like, just going outside and doing nothing much.
Yeah, weekend. And you have a short week, so I'm sure everyone just take that time off. So I think UK-wide is Thursday, Friday, both holidays, I believe. Chill out, take it off. I assure you it's worth it. Okay, let's talk about the newsletter real quick. Did you read it last week? And if so, what was interesting?
Yep, I did, and lots of interesting things. So the first one I wanted to quickly talk about was Hootsuite do an annual report on, like, social media usage and internet usage, and I found that really interesting. One of the things that I find most interesting is that, you know, we expect everybody's on the internet. And, you know, I think there's 7.6 billion people in the world, something like that. And 5.5 billion have got access to a phone, to like a mobile phone. 4.8 billion have got access to the internet. And I think of those, 4.6 billion have got access to social media and use social media. So almost everybody on the internet uses social media, but there's still a huge gulf in, you know, the number of people in the world and the number of people that are actively, you know, accessing the internet.
Yep.
So, you know, we know that when we're doing recruitment globally, because we know there's certain techniques and things around talent attraction which work in, you know, Europe and in North America and places like that, but maybe have got less success and you've got to take a different approach in maybe parts of Africa and South Asia, where maybe, yeah, access to smartphones, for example, are not quite the same.
That's
so good report.
It's an amazing report. I've just shared it in the chat stream. Everyone really should read this. I think I've kind of collecting together what I call annuals, you know, these sort of reports that really everyone should read. The sort of things that where you think, you know what, these are, you know, the classics, really. And Hootsuite definitely do one of those. I've just shared it in the stream there, so make sure you avail yourself to it. It's absolutely massive, but it's easy to read because every single one is just a visual slide. So look, it's copyright stats heavy. So take a look at it. Okay, what else, man?
I enjoyed the blog about short fat engineers being undervalued.
Right.
And this is not a slight on anybody's physical characteristics. It's about their skill sets, and so. There's two different types of engineers. There's tall and skinny, which means they've got a deep specialism in a specific area. And the short and fat, which means that they know a little bit about a lot. Now, there's so many different elements to this that are important because it's not just about engineers. This is about people in healthcare, people in marketing, people in almost every discipline, really. The type of company that you work for and the stage that company is at really determines whether tall and skinny or short and fat is important. If you're in an established or if you're in a growing and but sophisticated business with quite a lot of people, then absolutely understand that tall and skinny is the most valued skill set. You're not going to be able to progress in your career much if you're short and fat.
Yeah.
But if you're tall and skinny, you've got no place in a 20-person startup. If you're short and fat, you've got a really important place in a 20-person startup. So I wouldn't just throw, you know, short and fat people out. The other thing to say about this is if you're tall and skinny and you've got a specific expertise in a particular skill set that is in demand and, you know, high value right now, you could be of zero value to anybody in 12 months once that particular software program or tactic or whatever it is has been superseded by the next best thing. So there's merits in being short and fat as well. Of course, what you really want to be is tall and fat is what you really want to be. But so, it's difficult to achieve that.
Yeah, so for people who are late into the brain food and just catching Adam's monologue there, we're not referring to body shape. What we are referring to is like a visualization of your skill set. So in other words, are you one of those that's got a wide skill set and you know a lot of things about lots of different things, but you're maybe not an expert at those particular moments, you're a jack of all trades, or are you tall and skinny, meaning you've got just extraordinary depth of knowledge in a core discipline, but you know what, you're pretty useless outside of that framework. Have a think about you as a recruiter, actually. I think that's super interesting. Most people listening to Brain Food are recruiters. Are you a tall and skinny recruiter, or are you a short and fat one? Because that actually may make a big bit of difference in terms of your future-proofness, so to speak, your ability to respond to change and risk. So it's a fascinating way to think about it. The person who wrote it was a software engineer. He was thinking along those lines. But as you say, Adam, I think that's applicable across all disciplines, really. A very, very important kind of mental model to have. Okay, give me one more, man, before we get into the topic.
Oh, this is difficult. Can we do two quick ones?
Quick ones,
Right. Well, first is about being, this is really, really a personal thing for me, actually, is the importance of being data conscious and not data driven.
Right.
If you're data driven, there's so many different things that you miss out on. So if you make all your decisions based on data, there's no room for entrepreneurial instincts. There's no room for you're going to miss out on a lot of opportunity. And the other thing is, if you run your business, and this is the link to culture, if you run your business as a data-driven organization, then you're going to make big mistakes by going with data over going with instinct. And people use it to ultimately control how the business operates. And if you're using data on its own to control how the business operates, you're going to have a culture which is suboptimal. one of your favorite words.
Yep, and it's actually a really important, this is a brilliant blog. He wrote it in about 300 words or something, you know, perfect snackable content. But he created the this distinction between data-driven, hands up everyone who calls themselves data-driven, like over the last 5 years, everyone wants to say that, right? Hey, we're data-driven. But actually, what does that mean? Does it just mean just doing A-B tests all the time on everything, meaning you're not making any decisions whatsoever? And presumably any other person, any other company doing the same AB will end up doing exactly the same decision? Or are you using the data itself to inform you to make a human decision as to where you want to go? And oftentimes the way in which you differentiate your business or differentiate your method as a recruiter, let's say, is going to come down to your human judgment. It's not just about obeying the data, so to speak. It's using it and having, you know, a hierarchical relationship over it. You own the data. It's a tool that you use. It doesn't govern you. So I think that's a super important point. I've just shared it with the chat stream there. Please make sure you take a look at it. And actually, this is something that's going to be really interesting to talk about when we get the guests on, because, of course, you know, talent intelligence is all about diving into data and a bit more. In a bit more detail. Okay, one more, mate, before we do that.
Right. Okay, so the last one is, did extroverts ruin working at home for us or remote working for us? I've done a lot of study when I was a management consultant at PwC in the human resource services area, and I did a lot of work around channels and formats and content and how you should be communicating with your organization to inspire, you know, the best kind of operational effectiveness and all that type of thing, and linking it to employee engagement. And the challenge is that everybody has got a different, everybody's neurodiverse, right? So what works for some people does not work for other people. And the concept in here is did extroverts ruin working at home for the rest of us? Is there's a lot of people now saying, no, we need to be back in the office. Goldman Sachs, for example, has said, this is all nonsense. You need to be working in an office together. And everybody digests information in different ways and projects in different ways. And we need to be much more cognizant of that. And so, you know, the rules need a lot of consideration.
Yep, very interesting. And folks, I'd like you to kind of comment on this. I mean, do you think that the people that are on about going back to the office or they miss the office, are they the more extroverted personalities in the company? And are the introverts kind of a little bit anxious about the idea of coming back to the office in any way, shape or form? Because you're thinking, actually, I kind of like not having to front up in the office all the time. You know, when you go to the office, you're like, You're putting on a shirt. It's the entire thing is a performance. So a lot of people probably have never been comfortable with that. So introvert, extrovert, can you map that across back to the office, full remote? Let me know in the comments what you say. Okay, let's move on to the topic at hand. I was talking about talent intelligence. I don't think you know anything about it, Adam. In fact, I know you don't know anything about it. So I'm going to ask you real quick. What is talent intelligence? Demonstrate your lack of knowledge for us.
Well, here's the thing, right? So you've got people like Eightfold putting out videos about talent intelligence and using it in a completely different context to what I understand talent intelligence is. And talent intelligence is about using the data that you can generate and the insights that you can generate about whether you should set up your factory in Pakistan or India, about whether or not you should set up your next tech hub in Barcelona or Barcelona. Barcelona? That's Barcelona and Barcelona and Berlin combined, by the
Barcelona
way. One or the other. Yeah. It's about using the intelligence that you can generate to inform on strategic business decisions, not about should we hire this type of person or this type of person. So it's much, much more strategic than I think we are using it. That some people are using it.
How are Eightfold using it? Not to hammer on Eightfold, but I'd like to know.
They're using it in the context that our artificial intelligence can tell you that Hong is going to be good at this job and not at this job.
Okay, yeah. So I think that's different. That's like assessment related, isn't it? My understanding of talent intelligence, is similar to, is exactly the same as yours. So our level of ignorance is exactly the same, Adam, which is excellent. Which is, it's market intelligence. You are literally trying to figure out in terms of where the distribution of skills are, basically, so that you can then make proper decisions where to hire people. Now, super important, if we're all like shifting things to remote, it's actually massively important because you need to think about where the best places to hire your people if they can work from anywhere. Previously, you might have been locked down into a certain, oh, we've got five offices globally. These are the five offices. There's not much more you can do. The only time it comes up is if you're setting up a new office. But if suddenly if you have no office and you can recruit from anywhere, where do you recruit? Is it important? So anyway, we're going to bring onto the show three amazing people that really, I think, elite level experts at this. Some companies basically have created talent intelligence functions. Typically, they're mega massive companies like Amazon, Philips. We're going to bring those folks on, and they're going to help us educate ourselves and also hopefully everyone else. What this topic is, how you do it, and why is it important. So let's go ahead and do that.
It's traditionally been the domain of the big four. You've got consulting practices advising businesses on all of these types of things, possibly the management consultancies, maybe the strategy consultancies as well have probably been in this area. It's pretty new that it's been an in-house discipline, and you'd probably do need to be a mega sized business in order to have this in-house. Yeah. I think. But coming through a sourcing and recruiting kind of background and the ability to generate information and understand what to do with that information is possibly a very good step towards working in talent intelligence from my perspective.
It was previously sold as a service, but now I think companies are smartening up. So anyway, we've got some people to join us, which is amazing. Let's start with some intros. Allison, I hope that's you. There's one of these Allisons with no picture, no name. It is Allison Etridge. Thank you. It was a high risk Allison. There was an Allison with like no second name. I thought, right, who is this lady? Let's bring her on. Let's hope it is the right one. And it is, I'm pleased to say. So, okay, let's do some intros. Layla, you came on first. So why don't you start? Who are you and what it is you do?
I am a talent intelligence manager at Philips. I got hired by the lovely Toby, who's in this call here. Sadly, he left Amazon, but got hired by him, part of talent intelligence, specifically focusing on key account of mergers and acquisitions. So I think it's going to be interesting to share what talent intelligence does in the sphere of mergers and acquisition, and also really much trying to bring a little bit more behavior science and psychology into the whole world of talent intelligence.
I'm really, really hoping that we're going to hear a story here, which is that Layla and Toby now don't work in the same organization because they had a massive disagreement on like what talent intelligence should be. And we're going to get two completely different like opinions, and there's going to be all out talent intelligence warfare on this show.
That's exactly what happened.
I know that's not true, but at some point there will be a scenario where we bring on like two antagonists that didn't realize they were meant to be on the same show, and we'll have like a complete firestorm. At some stage this will occur.
Tom, you could bring on Eightfold and me, and then we can have a conversation about what we think talent intelligence is.
Well, we might have to set that up. That sounds like an interesting one to do, Alison. Okay, let's go with you, Toby. Who are you and what is you do, sir?
Yeah, so Toby, I used to run talent intelligence over at Philips, and now I do talent intelligence at Amazon, just for a little bit of Amazon, because we're quite a big company. So I handle talent intelligence for worldwide ops and consumer. So it's probably about 850,000 people, something like that.
Just a small job, really. What do you do the rest of the time, Toby? You know. How about you, Alison? Let's introduce yourself real quick. Who is it? Who are you, and what is it you do?
Thanks, Hung. I run a business called Talent Intuition, and we have a big data talent intelligence platform called Stratagems.
Amazing. Great to have you three join us. And wonderful that we're talking about talent intelligence. I've been monitoring this space a little bit, you know, had half an eye on it for about a year or so. And it seems that the discourse is increasing somewhat. We're more sensitive about the value of this. Adam and I had a go at this, it's kind of defining it, but maybe we can start off like that. I mean, how would you three define talent intelligence? Is it that important to define it in a certain way? But how would you kind of encapsulate it, someone who doesn't know anything about it, as a lot of these people who are watching, you know, are curious, but you know, with no knowledge? How would you describe this?
Toby's going to be quiet, so I'll go first, and then Toby, you can. Toby, Layla, and I actually, I think probably all going to agree, it's the use of external data around skills, people, real estate, business continuity, to inform strategic decisions. But I guess there's kind of an overlay or a complexity that then follows from that, which is you can either use it strategically. You know, where do we put an office? You know, what's our M&A activity or our origination? You know, what's our diversity? So you can use it strategically, or you can use it actually, where are the people? If we need to hire them, where are they? You can't get to them, but actually, where are they and what should we do? Or you can use it to look at your competitors. And I think you'll hear from particularly the others some kind of different conversations, but the use of external data to inform decisions.
Cool. Anybody want to support that, or is that more or less it? That could be the definition, you know?
I'd go with that.
Same.
Yeah, I think it's making much better informing decision making.
Nailed. All right, we've just established the canonical definition of talent intelligence. Anybody disagree with it? They're wrong. Okay.
We spent ages getting to that, hung. Ages and ages. Honestly, because we all disagreed with each other probably a year ago.
Well, sometimes, you know, when we're talking about these terms, it takes time to come to a consensus. Yeah. And oftentimes, a lot of the disagreements or sometimes really passionate arguments that occur in our industry, I think come across through, literally a difference of understanding what the terminology is, and then we're fighting over the different things. So let's go with the one that we're talking about here. It's external, it's not internal. It's external data that will inform some sort of decisions that you're going to make.
It's also not binary at this point. I think that you've got to, if there was disagreements about what the definition should be a year ago, and there's broad agreement at this point, it's going to ebb and flow over the next few years as well. And, as I mentioned earlier, we've got other people already using the term for completely different things. So you're defining a category of work or a category of profession at this point. And so it may be that talent intelligence isn't what you are calling this in 3 years' time, or maybe you are an eightfolder using something different.
At some point we just have to nail it, though. You know, this is like the right in the Bible. You can't have like multiple versions of it. Version control, you know, this is the Council of Nicaea. It's been decided. Talent intelligence is external data. So there we go. Let's talk about this. Alison, you mentioned a few use cases. I want to just dive straight into these use cases, because one of the obvious ones is competitor intelligence, right? So I am recruiting at elite level. I've identified a bunch of people I want to recruit from. How many of us recruiters have had that information from hiring managers? You know, I want you to hunt out of that company. That's a classic one, right? Recruiters get this. So how does this emerge and come down to the talent intelligence function? And then what do you do with that request? So let's go with you on that, Leila, if that's possible. How do you get work? Is the hiring manager come to you and say, look, we want information on these companies, and this how it goes?
So I think talent intelligence pretty much really succeeded in establishing a system of having, let's say, a structured competitor overview in form of battle cards. So we do have basically one slider is where we see our competitors do research. What is their value proposition? So how does their salary scheme, their compensation scheme, their bonus scheme looks like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And at the same time, try to understand where do we lack in, but also where are our unique selling points. And with those battle cards, basically we enable a recruiter to quickly get an overview of those specific competitors that they are supposed to hunt their talent from.
Does everyone understand the term battle cards in this call? I mean, do you? I don't, but I'm ignorant. I've never been employed, so you know,
So what I noticed in my career is that we give a lot of fancy names for a lot of like unfancy things. So it's literally just one slider where you name them battle cards. It's basically like a battlefield, right? A battlefield for talent. At least at Philips, we literally just have one sliders and you have structured info and intel on your competitors on these.
Cool. And what the TI team would do is they essentially do competitor research, find out how much they're getting paid, what are the benefits, maybe speak to some people who work there and say, what is cool about that company? Dare I say it, you might dive into review sites and stuff like this and see whether you can pick up some information to say, you know what, it seems that everyone's very happy with this thing that works in this business. Then you come back and present something back to the TA team and say, look, we're out of the game here. We're blown out in every single dimension. There's no chance of recruiting these people. Or you can say, look, here's a weak point in the competitor. Potentially we max out on that and we can build some employer branding around this approach.
100%. And I think what I've been predominantly working on with a colleague of mine is really much trying to drive, for instance, systemic approaches of integrating cultural aspects of those organizations in there. So not just having hard facts like salary, compensation schemes, et cetera, but really much understanding what are their organizational cultural unique selling points? Are they extremely innovative? Why is that? Do they enable young people to be extremely autonomous and flexible and thus come up with a little bit more of a, let's say, organizational psychological insight on those battle cards?
Amazing. Quick one for the audience. Colin, ask the question and ask a question section, please. Just copy and paste your comment there because we're going to go back to that. I think it's a really good question. So everyone who's there, who's on Crowdcast, if you do have a question, ask it and ask a question at the bottom and we'll get to it. For people on Facebook and LinkedIn, just comment and I'll see if I can get to them. On a mobile phone, I'll probably be able to do it. Okay. What about this use case? Let's go to Toby and Allison on this one. Is this a common use case? Competitor analysis, and maybe it's aggressive, but like you want to destabilize this competitor by taking people out of there. Is it at that level or how does it all work?
Toby, you go first.
Thank you. You can see I was going to go silent then. I would say it's not atypical. I don't think it's ultra common. And I think that comes back to the original point of what is talent intelligence. If you look across all talent intelligence roles out there at the moment, there's still a huge swathe that are within recruitment teams. It's sourcing roles on steroids. So it's a sourcing job with extra intel. And although the three of us are aligned in terms of what talent intelligence is, a huge swathe of the market isn't using the term in that way. So I think the battle card concept, it's becoming more common. You're seeing more companies doing it, but it's still not a hugely common piece. One thing it's very good for is when you do have strategic talent intelligence teams that are working outside of the recruitment TA teams, it's a great way to give something back. Is a great way to give something operational to the TA teams, because quite often you're still within those organizations, so you still want to give them something from your work. And it's a great, I'm all for using byproduct, and it's a great byproduct of other work that can be really, really helpful operationally as well.
Who does talent intelligence, does talent intelligence report into like chief strategy office, or does it report into HR, or does it report, where does it report into then?
I think this is a really interesting one because our clients for constructions is much more about the kind of strategic use. Our clients tend to be organization design and development, strategy and risk, and then HR in that order. But I think Toby and Layla are in a different spot.
Toby. Yeah.
I think that there's two things there, isn't there? There's talent intelligence as a function and talent intelligence as an activity. As an activity, it's pan-function. It goes all over the place. You could be in strategy, you could be in ops, you could be in competitive intelligence, marketing intelligence, M&A, it could be all over the place. Functionally, I think it's still, by and large, is formed within talent acquisition. It's quite often sourcing teams that are repurposed or twisted. Whether that's the right home for it, I've argued many times, I don't think it necessarily is. I think you quite often get driven in the wrong direction if you're under TA. I think it's going a lot of places.
And actually, there's something about so the competitive battle cards that ties really neatly into that. So you can use your competitive battle cards to go, right, what's the value proposition of A, B, and C, and named kind of your competitors from a commercial perspective. Or you can be quite cute and you can use a competitive battle card to go, right, what's changing? So these are the people that we compete with for skill X, Y, and Z. Have they taken up real estate near us? Because if they have, actually, that's going to start to impact on what we're doing. Yeah, have they started hiring for a different skill type than they were hiring for before? Because that can tell us something. Now, those are really strategic answers that can come out of that. That's not necessarily about talent acquisition. And so you can, if you really want to grab massive value out of talent intelligence, you can look at it through a slightly different lens, I think, which is where Toby comes from, and Leo, actually.
The easiest way to know, just the, and it's a very Amazonian thing, so I'm going to say it because I'm here now, is identifying who your customer is. Yeah. If your customer is TA and you're doing, even if it's strategic intel, but it's running through for a recruitment team and TA, then you're going to be sat there. If your customer isn't and it's the broader business, it opens up options as to where you should sit.
All right, let's talk about this, guys. How do you do it? You've got some direction from somewhere, hiring manager, CEO, somebody's told to talent intelligence, I want to research this company. What is the technique? What is the approach to do that?
That's a good question. I think everyone has a different approach to it, to be honest. I think there are common tools that talent intelligence uses. So there are tools like Talent Neuron, there are tools like LinkedIn Insights. There is a lot of open source data that we use. I think ultimately for the M&A and strategy accounts, where we look at specific targets, most of the time specific departments of companies, we really much spend hours on researching an approximate estimate of their org design by literally looking through LinkedIn Insights, looking at the people, trying to understand how are they basically structured, why are they structured this way. We read through, for instance, the annual reports of companies. There is so much intel in those annual reports, which you can just like get out of it, about their strategy, about their talent hiring strategy. So it's just, I think at a certain point, figuring out the wideness of tools that are out there and the data that is out there and really much applying it and putting the puzzle pieces together.
Yep. So a lot of this, people who are working in exec search, I wonder whether they might kind of resonate with a lot of this style of work, because it feels like you're doing the sort of research that a researcher might do working for Korn Ferry or something, where, you know, you're doing all kinds of, pulling out public data, you're getting it from, you know, a company's house, you're getting all kinds of different types of information, and you're building some intelligence as to what this company looks like.
Oh, hang on, I love that. The reason that we set up Stratagems was because all of us have come from a researcher background, from exactly that background, right, and answering these big questions. And we recognised that there was this qualitative research and then quantitative data. And so Stratagems provides a bunch of the quantitative data that is just big data that you can't get. And then you overlay that with decent research, you know, with people from a research background. And that ties into what Adam was saying earlier about being data-driven versus data-conscious, right? You have to use a combination of the data and qualitative research to apply, you know, to any problem, I think.
Is there a way to monitor in real time? Because it strikes me this is great to do that research, but at best it will give you a snapshot, right? So in other words, you do the research, you compile a report, you present the report. That's great, but the report will decay over time. Like, things will happen over months and years or whatever, maybe even sooner, in a dynamic environment, that report becomes out of date. Are there tools out there which you can just like monitor, stuff where it's tracking what's going on? And what are those tools? I want to hear about them. They sound sexy.
Toby, you go.
The honest answer is I think there are some great tools that aggregate the data. So that I won't mention all the names, but, you know, Stratagems is a great one, but you've got some Talent Neuron, LinkedIn, MZ, Horsefly, there's a whole raft of great tools. They're usually aggregating data. So whether it's aggregating from social platforms, whether it's aggregating from Bureau of Labor Statistics or Office of National Statistics, whatever it may be, it's just wrapping your arms around all these different dirty data sets and trying to like make sense of it and push it back. The reality is that there isn't real clean data out there for a lot of this stuff. It's all contextual. So it's understanding if the taxonomy over here says this and the taxonomy over here says this, are they the same things? Is that software engineer the same as this software engineer? So I wouldn't say there's clean products out there for a lot of this stuff yet. You'd certainly see things coming through that are trying to do elements. So whether it's looking at organizational senior leadership, for example, and creating org charts and trying to have them update in real time, for example, certainly see products around that. You're certainly seeing products around competitor intelligence and what are going on from a company perspective. Are they opening up new sites? Are they expanding their product range, et cetera? But it's still, I think it's still quite piecemeal. And I think it's that's why the context is so important. It's understanding what those differences are.
Yep. Yeah. And that's why you need a bunch of people to do it, right? So it's not like you can set it up and have a few robots like harvesting stuff back for you. You could do it, but that's like a very low level. To give proper valuable intelligence, you need dedicated resource.
And I think sorry, Toby, go on.
No, I was just going to say a final point, and I will be quiet. But I think that's also where I see TI differentiating from, say, people analytics, HR analytics. People analytics, HR analytics, the maturity curve is going towards self-service. It's getting that data sets. It's all relatively clean data internally, putting it out there in a very digestible dashboard and people self-serve it. You just can't do that, in my mind, for talent intelligence, because you lose that contextual piece. And it's so, so important when you are looking at the external market, because the context is completely vital. The data is half the story, if that, probably 40% of the story. The context is far more important.
Well, there is no one thing that you're working on, probably, which mirrors something that you did 6 months ago or 12 months ago or 18 months ago. So the trends in that and the predictive analytics are probably not as well-defined and useful as they are in the internal people analytics.
You know what? It's interesting when you mentioned that, Adam, everyone was agreeing very rapidly that it's like the requirements are diverse. They're changing as they come at you. What is the driving the requirement? Is it sort of whimsical, if you like? You know, is there someone just saying, "Hey, that's interesting," or is it more reactive in the sense of, you know, we've seen a big move by this company, that's going to mean something to us. Let's figure out what that is, because sometimes you do see that happen as well. You know, for instance, company raises a big round of money, they suddenly book for an office in Dublin somewhere. Guess what? That's going to disturb the market in that particular category. So competitors in that space in Dublin, if they happen to be there, probably need to know what the plan is. So how does that sort of the requirement come through to the TI team?
I think it depends on, I think it depends actually. So I think if you're internal, it tends to be very focused. Yeah, this is a problem. This is something that we've identified. Now, what do we do about it? Or something that we've heard on. If I look at it through the clients that are working with us, they tend to be organizations that are going through massive transformation, being disrupted in a huge way, or in a space where actually skills are just a nightmare to get. And so it's much more proactive and ongoing in that scenario. And I think those are two kind of different things. You know, really, this isn't about reacting to what's in front of you. It's about the fact that actually this is about competitor advantage. You know, if we're going to be ahead of our competitors, we've got to be ahead of the curve. And it's no different to the way that organizations use sales intelligence or market intelligence. You're just applying it to talent. And with CEOs going, talent's our most important resource, why wouldn't you do it? You know?
Yeah, 100%. And I also think what I see happening, which I find quite interesting, is that when I started, it was pretty much request-based process. So a request would come from a stakeholder. There are specific key account managers which either focus on manufacturing or on M&A or on marketing, et cetera, et cetera. And what I see now is that more and more TI, at least at Philips, is really much driving into a really holistic human capital intelligence consultancy, which really tries also bottom up to implement. So if we see certain trends and I see something happening in a project of my colleague, and I see, okay, this actually ties to, let's say, wanting to hire and become a more agile organization, I reach out to people and stakeholders which I know are busy with that and showcase, okay, this is what we are working on. Are you actually aware of this? So I think it's really interesting to really try to also influence, if you sit within TI internally, bottom up and really much make stakeholders aware of what's going on the market.
right? So it's not just like receiving a ticket. Actually, the evolution of the function as it matures should be just advising those different stakeholders, you know what, you need to know about this because this seems to be happening. And that brings us to this next major point, because obviously over the last 12 months or so, there's been this huge shift in terms of how people want to work and how people are behaving, a global kind of a change. What sort of is information and insights are you delivering back to your business now on the back of, you know, the things that you've picked up over the last 12 months or so?
So we've helped 3 clients relocate shared service centers. We've helped 2, and these are all major corporates. We've helped 2 clients completely look at whether or not they need to have a headquarters in a specific location. And we've helped 1 client move out of London, just to kind of put that into context.
Very interesting. So you've got real political influence and economic influence to an extent. And you could be considered very, very enemy of the people in certain places,
or friend of the people in the others. That's, you know, kind of the positive side.
What Alison taketh, Alison giveth back elsewhere.
Yeah, Alison doesn't want to be in people. I don't want to be in private eye.
No,
so Robin Hood on my head.
Yeah, my question about that is, I'm really interested in the shared services, because being in Scotland, which is like, you know, been for a long time in the 90s and 2000s, it was back office capital of the world, I think, with the IT shared service centers and finance shared service centers. And they all came and they went, and they've all gone east. They all went to, you know, Poland, and they're going further east again. I mean, is the trend just go east? Is that the trend?
It depends. So no, I think it's a short answer. It depends entirely on what the shared service is going to be. What we're seeing is an increase in higher level roles in shared services. So we're seeing definite increase around things like data science and digital and IT skills, and less transactional. So they're definitely moving from transactional into kind of some different areas. And it depends entirely on what the drivers are for the client. So some clients will say, actually, this is all about us making sure that we can always have the right talent in the right place. And that, that's the kind of driver over and above risk, whereas some clients are going, actually, geopolitical risk is really important to us, and therefore we need to balance that against where we put a different shared service center. Some clients, it's all about cost. Yeah, and then it's east.
Yeah.
And I think interesting is also to see that it's most of the times I have the feeling even multifactorial, right? So if you, for instance, want to, just being blunt, you want to save costs with talent, and you want to become more innovative, and you want to build R&D hubs in locations which are cheaper. And the stakeholder comes to you and is, okay, let's go to Russia, let's go to China. And then this legal aspect comes in of intellectual property. Then also, I think it depends on the mindset of stakeholders. Some stakeholders really much understand that to become more innovative, like the solution is not just to save cost and outsource to the East, but that it's a way more holistic picture, right? It's like it has to do with strategy, it has to do with organizational culture, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's really multifactorial, and it's something which I see people understand more and more.
This is probably the most interesting part of TI, isn't it? So the first part of competitive analysis and all this may just be, you know, oh my goodness, yes, we have another hiring manager that's obsessed with competitor X. But here, it's literally about determining the future of the business and where these jobs might be arriving. So COVID-19 hits, complete flattening of businesses, also really challenging the idea of the certain like key hubs of where you need to have staff. Where are these jobs actually starting to be? Where's the right place to put these jobs? I mean, if you strip out the politics out of it, it might make no sense, for instance, to put job A in country B, when in fact it just like costs 100 times the amount to put it there. So what's happening with job flight? Where are these jobs going? I think we need to know as recruiters, because as we're recruiting these people in a remote anywhere kind of world, we probably need to be cognizant of where, you know, the right skills are in certain places.
I think for me, there's a couple of bits there. I think just to clarify, when you mentioned the hiring manager wanting to know about competitor A, B, or C, the vast majority of the demand I see for understanding competitor intel it's not from hiring managers, it's from business leaders. It's that they're trying to see, use labor market data as an early predictor of what competitors are planning to do in the future, because they might start hiring R&D staff they've never hired before, looking for salespeople into markets they've never broken into before. So it's important to see the competitor intel stuff. It's way broader than a hiring manager just saying, I'd quite like to know who's hiring or what they're doing over there. I think in terms of the roles generally, for me, there's two things happening. There's surveys that have been done in a remote working environment that aren't being done in a remote working environment. They're being done in a remote working environment while in the middle of a pandemic, whilst everyone's homeschooling. I'm not personally convinced by some of this data that's coming through that it's true and valid. And I think we're going to see that come through probably for the next 6-12 months. We'll see probably an evening out of what people are actually wanting and where it's going. I'm also seeing a very different take on things, whether it's coming from a company perspective or a candidate perspective. And depending on whether companies are candidate focused or company focused, I'm seeing two different pools. So you're seeing in the US, for example, the hollowing out cities, where a lot of the individuals are moving out to the suburbs because they're saying, I'm only going to be in the office 2-3 days a week. I don't need to live in the center of town anymore. We're seeing, obviously, Indeed did a study, I think it was last week or week before, in the UK, lots of roles that historically have been down as remote are now being more roles being published as temporary remote. So there's a big pull that they are going to try and pull people back to an office. So, yeah, the honest answer is I don't think there's an answer. It's once again contextual. It's going to be keep an eye on things and see how things change.
Yeah, I think that's so true, isn't it? Because there's this element, actually there's a business that it would be really cool to have hung, which is a business called Leesman Index. And they look at the link between employee engagement and office space. And they've got some really cool data that's coming out right now that's helping to inform some of these decisions. So they're definitely worth a look. And then, when we first set up Strategens, right, we did it because we thought that 3 to 5 years out, there was this trend that said organizations are going to have to follow talent rather than just assume that talent will come to themselves. And then what COVID did was it accelerated that trend by about 6 weeks, which was great for our business, right? But actually, it wasn't necessarily great for everyone else in the world. And what we're seeing now is kind of what we call a maturity curve, and we'll pop a link in because people can kind of do it for free. But it's what an organization needs to do is break a role down into different tasks and understand where a task is best done. So it's not whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. It's not whether or not you are in Portugal or whether you're in London. It's actually what's the stuff that we need to do together in a role. And what's the stuff that you can do in a different space, whether that's at home or whether it's a co-working space or whether it's somewhere else? And I think that's where you can be clever about what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm completely with you there. I think it's like this whole extrovert, introvert aspect. I think every psychologist just starts cringing because it's so much more complex than just having a dimension and two poles, right? You can be an extrovert at home and an introvert at work. Like, it completely depends on your context. And I think understanding the talent and there the psychology and behavior science and talent intelligence comes in is absolutely crucial. So what we have done, we are also at Philips figuring out, okay, how do we roll out work from home and come back to the office after COVID? And what we did is really much looking internally at the needs of the talent and see, okay, there are actually huge differences in age buckets, right? So rolling out one strategy for a company of 80K, while we have completely different needs and completely different age buckets for completely different talent, where, for instance, some talent needs to continuously collaborate. They need to sit together and brainstorm and have like brainstorming hackathons for a week in a nice, fancy environment where others can sit at home and reply some emails in their office privately. So yes, it really depends on, again, what Toby said, context.
There's a really interesting report coming out this Sunday on Brain Food, which you should subscribe to already, by the way, folks, from Microsoft. And they did basically their 2001 work trends analysis of the internal data, and they've just come out with some really, I think, more nuanced thinking about exactly these things, meaning a hybrid may be inevitable, but it's also going to happen with these problems. And there's going to be different cohorts which are going to be affected positively and negatively, particularly this focused on early entry talent, for instance. How are they going to handle a situation when, you know, they don't have the opportunity for across the desk type of learning? You know, that's a huge issue in terms of skills development for a young person that's entering the workplace for the first time. So, okay, we're running short on time. So I want to move quickly to, I'll come to you in a bit, Adam. But I want to come quickly to, okay, we've got a bunch of people watching this and thinking, oh, that's cool. I think I want to get into talent intelligence. Firstly, how do they do it as a career? And secondly, if they're going to set something up internally, when would it make sense for them to do that? Because I think it's a certain size, isn't it, required before that happens or what? Let's go with this. How do I get into this career path?
I'll do career path, then Toby, you can do, and Layla, you can do size, because I think that's really important. So if I look at the skills that we've got in our team, we've got a data scientist, we've got a researcher, we've got a market intelligence individual. So it doesn't, and we've got someone who is talent acquisition, right? So it doesn't matter. These teams are made up of a whole bunch of different people. We're going to produce a report, and we haven't started on it yet, so I don't quite know when it's going to come out, but probably in Q2, that looks at which are the companies that have got talent intelligence teams, which are the functions, and how do those functions break down in terms of skills. So when we've done that,
better talent intelligence, that's literally looking at talent intelligence. Talent intelligence, that's amazing.
Do you know what? Nick Brooks from Microsoft suggested it on one of our podcasts, and I went, that's a great idea. Why didn't I think of that? So now we're doing it, right? why we haven't used strategist data to do that before, I don't know. So I think there's a whole bunch of different skills that can come into a talent intelligence function, and all are equally valuable. And actually, you know, Layla is a cracky example of someone who's again got a completely different skill set, who brings a different view.
Yeah, I think talent intelligence is really like the benchmark example of just a pot of people with completely different backgrounds and completely different educational backgrounds, skill sets, et cetera, et cetera. But I think there's a common denominator of being really sharp, being really analytical, and being able to really think holistically. That's something that's like the one component which I see in every single one of them. Yeah.
I was just going to cite myself as being completely unsuited to a career path here, because you're going to need like detail, and you need like care for detail, right? So those two elements I simply don't have. Let's go to very quick. We're going to have to move on because time is pressing. Adam, you're going to say something. Now is the moment.
I was going to say I disagree that you don't have an attention to detail, because your production of Brain Food newsletter involves a lot of attention to detail.
That's an obsession. Same thing.
What I wanted to actually ask about was pretty big question around M&A, because you mentioned it at the beginning. I think you all mentioned it at the beginning. Are you told here's the company strategy? If you can go and find out opportunities that we should be looking at based on your talent intelligence, then let us know. Or are you told, we're thinking about buying one of these four companies, tell us which ones have got the, you know, are the best suited for what reasons? How does that work? Or could it be either?
So it's the latter, but I think we are moving, like, the benchmark and the North Star is really moving to the first option, right? To really have strategic human capital merger and acquisition insights, and really much defining like merger and acquisition decision making by providing talent intelligence intel. So far, it's really much having stakeholders coming in, basically expressing this and this is a target that we are looking at. Please do research around the leadership. We want to know what skill set does the leadership possess, what kind of leadership style does the leadership possess, how is the org structure, et cetera, et cetera. But I do think that it's a fairly newly game in talent intelligence, and more they see the value of in this really short-term oriented profits world of M&A to look a little bit more in the long term and actually the value that you have with the human capital that you acquire.
Yeah, so I think it depends on the type of business, right? So if you are a business that acquires people services businesses, and 75% of those people leave within 3 years of you buying that organization, then what are you buying? So in those cases, you need to look at, okay, where is the skill set that we are after? And are we better off acquiring that company in order to get that skill set and those people? Or actually, is there a different approach? Can we get just go after the people? You know, and so I think that's when it becomes really quite strategic. Toby, did you, yeah, and you answered company size, Toby, I think, didn't you as well?
Yeah, he's typed it in, but he's going to have to read out what he's typed. I think that's...
It won't make any more sense when he talks about it.
Yeah, people on different channels can't see the answer there.
Fair enough. Basically saying all company size. You don't wait till you're a big enterprise company to do this stuff. Ironically, the smaller the company, the more you need talent intelligence. Because if Amazon, for example, or Philips... If we set up a service center or put 50 design engineers in the wrong place, it will be painful, but we'll survive. If you're a company that's 200 people in a small tech startup and you put 25 headcount in the wrong place, you're going to die. You'll go under. So, ironically, the smaller the company, the more you need this stuff.
Yeah, who's strangling somebody in the background?
Yeah. Somebody that needs to take an intervention there. So Toby, if you need to step away, feel free.
It's one of the three boys, they'll take care of it themselves. It's
like, okay, amazing. We need to go to questions, folks, because we've got eight of them lined up. So let's go crack through these. Some of these have already been answered, so forgive me if I skip. Sophia, we've answered that one. So we're going to delete that. What tools? We've answered that one as well. Talent Neuron, whatever. Okay, this one from how do you define? Okay, this one's pretty good. How do you define your competitors? Is it by industry alone, product, skills? What? How do you define it? We need quick answers, folks. Let's go to you on this one, Layla.
I'm giving that to Toby. I'm sorry.
Okay, no worries.
Toby.
Competitors entirely depends on who your customer is and what you're doing. So you're going to have competitors for talent, you're going to have competitors for market share. Entirely depends on who's asking the question.
Yep, perfect, perfect. Okay, done.
Great answer.
Depends. Let's move on. This is again from Adam. Adam, why are you asking all these questions?
It's not. It's Colin's questions.
I see. Okay. Colin, what's going on here? If there isn't a magic bullet out there that can provide clean data for businesses to work with, how do businesses do it themselves? Do it differently. I presume we've already answered that in a sense. You've got a team doing it, right? There's a human person basically mashing that data and compiling it into a sensible insight. Okay, here's a good one from Bill.
Hang on. I'm going to follow up on that. So you've got a team to do the qualitative stuff. You've also got to look at the big data stuff and the quantitative stuff. There are shed loads of platforms out there. Stratagens is one of them. There are others. We'll pop a link somewhere we've got a guide to choosing a platform that we've put together with a whole bunch of talent intelligence professionals.
Right, so we'll stick that link in now, Alison. That would be really useful to have. I deleted a question that was really good from Bill. Let me just see if my brain can recall it. It was, how do your internal clients determine success?
The company succeeds and doesn't die.
Like how are you measured? Like, is it possible for them to say that's rubbish?
Toby, you can keep going on this. We'll put a link to a tip sheet series, which has got KPIs and return on investment for talent intelligence teams in the chat.
All right. That's perfect. I think it's going to be quite hard for them to challenge you. It's almost like having a builder around to your house, isn't it? Like, what are you going to say? You have no idea what you're going to just accept the quote. What can you do? There is a list. Abkarali, that's going round. We've got this from Steve. He's saying, where does geographical talent perception fit in all of this? Sometimes this intelligence can be hard and weighty, sometimes blunt edge. If, for example, you dump a SSC in Athens, how do you know the talent in Athens really wants this? I don't think that's a very good question, but do you understand what he means? Kind of, sort of.
Get your SSC out of our city. We're not interested in your finance and IT jobs. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't understand the question too well. Sorry. Final thing. Okay, this is from Colin again. In data regarding workforce placements being skewed by more and more, is data regarding workforce placements being skewed by remote opportunities? i.e. a business in Manchester is based in one location, but they're actually hiring people remote anywhere. How do we kind of connect that? Do we still lump that in with as a Manchester employed person, or is it in fact this could be a shell and this all these people are employed in other places? How do we track that and make sure we connect all these in?
That's one of the really messy things about the data sets, and each platform will have a different answer to it. So it depends on whether or not an individual, a profile, and therefore a skill set is tagged to the location of the company or tagged to their home location.
Yeah, I think it's going to be about payroll, isn't it? And that's actually a really interesting thing to talk about for another session. How do you like deal with global compensation when in fact you've got, you know, do you pay per job? Do you pay, do you factor in cost per living? What do you do when someone relocates from an expensive place to a cheap place? You cut the person's salary. How does that look in terms of your PR? You know, all kinds of crazy things to talk about there. Anyway, we are at the end of time, folks. So we're going to have to close it there. What a wonderful show it's been. Adam, yeah, go ahead.
Right. Just really quickly, I've been wondering this in the beginning. Alison, Stratagens. I'm trying to work out what it means. Gens in French is Jean, which is people. Is that it?
So strategy and people mixed together. That's why we've got two stratagems. Right, no worries. Right. Thank you.
Okay, that's it, everybody. Thank you so much for your time. If you have enjoyed this show, make sure you follow the channel. We do this every Friday, apart from Good Friday, because we're going to observe Easter for the first time. Of course, we are going to do that. Good Friday next week, so no show. We'll be back the week following with something also amazing. I can't remember what it is. It'll probably be something also really weird, like, oh, it's about RPOs, I think. It is about how to work better with RPOs. So again, we're hitting with the kind of enterprise level stuff. It's going to be a super exciting thing. Bear in mind, by the way, Recruiting Brain Food has a new service out. It's a new newsletter coming out on Monday called This Week in Recruiting. Do you know about it? If not, you do now. Make sure you subscribe to it. I'm going to do it on LinkedIn. And actually, I'm going to may as well use this opportunity to explain just very quickly why I'm doing this. The main reason is simply because the newsletter on Sundays got too big. I'm splitting it in half. And the newsletter on Sunday is going to stay as it is with the evergreen content that you need to kind of stimulate your mind with. That's going to be awesome. However, the stuff you need to know this week, in other words, the time-sensitive information is going to go to the new newsletter. So you click it open on Monday. It's going to tell you what you need to look out for in terms of webinars, events, who's hiring, who's available, what company news is going on. It's all going to happen on Monday. Make sure you subscribe. We've been going 4 days. We're already at 10,000 subscribers, folks. So it's going to be massive. Okay, that's about it. We'll see you all next week. Thank you so much for your time, everybody.
Thank you all.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you.
That was really good, huh?
That was just brilliant. I've loved quite a few of our Brain Food Lives in the last few weeks. I really have.
They've been really, really interesting, like intellectually interesting, where I'm like literally obviously an idiot. I mean, everyone can see, like, I genuinely don't know anything about this. So it was fascinating to be educated there.
Yeah, absolutely. I've learned loads as well. I've got something else I've got to say about the people that work in talent intelligence. They've got a clear tribal kind of personality trait, which is complete courtesy. They always invite each other to answer the question first. And
yeah, I saw that.
You know,
I did see that, and that was very nice. But also, it's interesting that, you know, how do you create a function? How do you then sort of create an identity? And I think it's useful to do that because it is different from people analytics. I think that is a similar skill set, perhaps, or, you know, adjacent skill sets, but definitely two different functions we're going to see a lot more of going on. Anyway, that's about it. What's going on life-wise, otherwise, sports-wise, boxing, anything going on interesting? There's not really,
yeah,
is there?
Yeah, oh yeah, there really is. There's Dillian White and Povetkin 2 tomorrow night.
Is that right?
And yeah, tomorrow night. And the undercard is even brilliant. Fabio Wardley, Ricky Hatton's son, whatever his name is. There's a seriously good undercard. It's on Sky pay-per-view.
I'm predicting, like, punch for punch action replay.
Oh no.
Dominating performance by Dillian, and then Povetkin out of nowhere throws a left hook somewhere and knocks him out.
Surely not. He was the mandatory challenger for the WBO belt for 1,000 full days, and then for some reason decided to fight Povetkin and got knocked out.
It's gonna happen again.
It can happen again. No, he's gonna. No way. If I tell you what, if it happens again, he deserves it. Because you know, it's not gonna be. It shouldn't be difficult for him to just keep him at bay with the jabs.
It's hard to do over a period of time. I think you get mentally jaded. You know what I mean? It's that level of concentration. It's so difficult.
Povetkin's nearly the same age as me. He's 41.
He's very old. He
should be able to keep him away with a jab.
Yeah, that's true enough. All right, listen, we're finished. So we'll see you everyone next week. Have a good week, Adam. I'll chat to you soon, okay?
Bye.